I'm going to give you a chance to win very quickly before I move on with the programme today, because the Ardoolane Bistro as part of the Ardoolane Hotel, a well-known and much-loved and established Galway hotel, has introduced a new seasonal menu to service the locals and visitors alike to Galway. The Ardoolane Bistro is perfect for all occasions, from casual dining to special celebrations, including Valentine's, with a relaxed and inviting atmosphere from day to night. Child-friendly also. Hot food is served all day from 12 noon until 9 p.m. And the Ardoolane kitchen team offers seasonal specials which change daily to make the most of the freshest produce and include delicious fish and roasts of the day as well. They do some power salads available to you as well. And again, soups and signature sandwiches. And the Ardoolane kitchen also offers sumptuous afternoon tea available from 2 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. as well. But just to celebrate for today, the wonderful Ryan family and the team in the Ardoolane Hotel in Taylor's Hill, for Mother's Day, what they've done quite simply is a three-course lunch on Mother's Day in the Camelon restaurant for two adults and two other people as well. So they're two and two, two children. So Camelon restaurant for two adults and two children. And what you can do quite simply is you have to text in the word bistro to 086 38 33 55 3. That's bistro, B-I-S-T-R-O. To 086 38 33 55 3 and be in with the chance to win that. We're going to close the lines after the next interview. So if you get them in quickly, you can be in with the chance. And don't forget, if you want to get further details, just contact the Ardoolane Hotel in Taylor's Hill to celebrate Mother's Day in the Ardoolane Bistro if you want to do it yourself. But anyway, there's two adults, two children, and we have the voucher here, and you're booked in to go. But you just have to send the word bistro. Anyway, let me move on today because I want to go to two of our colleagues in Dáil Éireann as well. I want to go to Senator Sean Kyne, who's spoken on this, and I also want to go to Eamon O'Queeve. Sean, first off, good morning to you, and Eamon, good morning to you as well.
Good morning to you, Keith.
Good morning, and Sean, you can hear me okay there as well?
Yep.
Perfect. Well, I'm going back to the District Hospital in Clifton because I'm frightfully confused over this. Now, Eileen Mannion, your council colleague, Sean, has been doing her best to keep me up to date here. But what is the situation? Because I know yesterday, Minister Mary Butler, for older people, said that a special derogation had been given to the HSE to allow recruitment of extra staff for Clifton Hospital and St Anne's CNU in Clifton. So why is the hospital closed then?
Well, Keith, the hospital closed last week, and it closed without any announcement, without any notification. Now, there has been notifications for the last maybe 18 months, which, you know, when the hospital was
closed, holidays and otherwise,
over Christmas and Easter and the summer, and you know, people knew what was going on. So this closure came out of the blue. It was unannounced. There are staffing issues, there are staffing challenges, but there is some confusion, I have to say, in relation to the posts, because these are existing posts. These are existing nurses, existing staff that are there. They are funded to operate the hospital, but there seems to be confusion whether there is a derogation required or permission required. Sorry, now these are bells again of one of the committees that are going in the background. There seems to be some confusion whether these are whether permission has to be sought from HSE and nationally for existing posts. Now, I didn't realise, and I hadn't thought that there should be, because these were existing posts. So the minister has indicated that they're seeking a derogation. So that's where the confusion arose. I suppose the two challenges: one, certainty on that, and I think that has to be notified and rectified quickly, that we get certainty on that these posts are actually filled and funded, and they can be filled. The second challenge is, of course, getting the staff to fill them, where people are out sick or people retire, to actually get people physically in the locality who are willing to take positions in the district hospital, okay, and in St Anne's, and obviously, but I mean, that's the challenge we face.
But the situation is, I'm going to Deputy O'Queeve, good morning to you. I mean, I don't know of any other hospital.
Good morning.
I don't know of any other hospital, never mind in the country, but in the world, that can actually close down due to lack of staff and decide, we'll close the doors until such time as we get staff in again.
The situation is, of course, that the Clifton Hospital.
No, but hang on, and just answer that question, though. How can they close a hospital due to lack of staff?
Because they say they're not able to get the staff. Now, Sean has a fair point that he made. My understanding is that they've been told that they can hire whatever staff they need, and to avoid in the longer term using agency staff where possible. In the meantime, they have a carte blanche to get whatever agency staff they need to keep the hospital open. But the reality is they are finding it hard to attract staff to take jobs in Clifton, and that is a reality that's inescapable. The other thing is, basically what you have in this hospital, the whole hospital consists of respite beds, a very small number of respite beds and short stay beds. So it's not a hospital in the conventional sense, the GUH of the hospital or in the other big hospitals. Now, the other bit of progress made yesterday, it's kind of a bit of progress, not great progress, but there's a planning application in for a 40-bed CNU.
That's right,
yeah. And that's been put in further information. I wasn't able to access on the web what information is requested. I hope it's not something that will require a long delay. In other words, often if it's environmental issues or whatever, there can be delays because you have to wait for seasons and growing seasons. I hope it's nothing like that,
okay,
and that this can proceed and whatever information is needed can be got back urgently. Because as you would appreciate, it would be much easier if all of the beds were on one site to keep it staffed.
Mm. But Sean, I mean, it's all okay to say that the respite beds and all of that, but it's an asset for the Celta Hospital Group. And I'm told there's people in University Hospital Galway that could be transferred out to open up beds for other people, but they can't because they can't be sent out. There's nowhere for them to go.
Absolutely. It's vital for the community to release pressure on GUH. As you know, Clifton is, you know, depending on traffic, could be an hour and a half from Merlin Park if you had to visit somebody in there, for example, if they're in Merlin Park, or indeed, obviously, in GUH as well. So these are vital in terms of community respite and step-down facilities. Respite is hugely important to all families. So it's a vital service. And look, the minister has been quite frank. It's her intention that Clifton District Hospital will reopen as quickly as possible. There's nothing underhand here. Absolutely the intention to ensure that the Clifton District Hospital reopens, and eventually the longer term plan is as Eamon has said, is the new 40 bed unit, which will be amalgamation of the two facilities. But that's down the road.
But I mean,
in the short to medium term.
But what is
so
it?
It's absolutely vital that this facility stays open and that it is staffed. So as I said, we need the certainty that the posts can be filled, and secondly, obviously, the challenge is to actually get the staff to fill them.
But Eamon, what is it with the Celta Hospital Group when it comes to infrastructure? They're the slowest, I think, in the country to put in a planning application, as has been the case indeed with Clifton. Now it's gone for further information. But why is it? Why does it have to be this flipping slow?
I don't know, and I think one of the big issues we need to tackle is the delay in building what is, in this case, quite a modest project. Now, there are constraints in relation to the site, I understand, that had to be overcome. But The reality is, it is way too slow to get projects off the ground. We're too slow approving them for consideration and then getting through the procedures. And that is something that has to be tackled and that, you know, would make you tear your hair out. Can I say one thing? The minister made it absolutely clear when I was talking to her yesterday that she has instructed the HSE that CNUs are to be, community nursing homes right across the state, are to be kept open and operable to the capacity. And any barrier that, you know, is there, it won't be from the Department of Health. And she's made that clear. And that's where the whole issue of, you know, people saying, well, you know, we can't get the staff, there's an embargo on recruitment or all these things. They're not operable. She has made it absolutely clear. Okay. Whatever needs to be done can be done, and it's up to the HSE now to do it. And as Sean said, we need a hospital open all of the time. And in the very, very worst case scenario, if it has to close for a few days, which is still totally unsatisfactory, we should be, and the public should be given good notice.
All right, Sean, you want to come in on that, because you've been very critical of the Celta Hospital Group, indeed, about planning permission when it comes to the new ED department, children's and the maternity ward in UHG. Has that been applied for yet?
No, it hasn't, Keith. And
I throw my hat in the air.
I raised this in the Shannon last week, I think it was, and you know, there's a new committee now that are looking at the future of
the site,
the UHG site.
Yeah.
And
further delays.
The latest I had told by Bernard Gloucester last October that a report would be finalized in about 3 months. I now understand that report is hoped to be published next September, so that's probably going to be Christmas, and then they'll decide the priority in which they apply for projects. So the whole thing is an absolute joke. It is delay after delay. We've had options appraisal. Bernard Gloucester has stated, we have spent too much time debating in Galway, not about, you know, building and pushing forward. It's about where we're going to build stuff. And this is it has been an absolute joke from start to finish what has been going on in Galway. We've delivered not enough. There's so much needed. We are behind the curve in delivery of all these capital projects, and it's absolutely vital that they get their act together and go on and apply for planning permission for DDE maternity and paediatrics. And could I just say finally, Keith, my colleague Councillor Eileen Mannion has organised a meeting for next Monday in the Clifton Town Hall at 6 p.m. She's done a lot of work with this and keeping me informed, and as a conduit with the HSE as well. And as I said, she and the rest of us were caught blindsided by this closure that was unannounced. So we need better communication from the HSE in relation to issues as they arise, because it just causes concern for the public. So that's 6 p.m. next Monday night in Clifton Town Hall.
All right, Senator Sean Kyne, thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. I'm joined in the studio by D. Timoney, who's Network Manager with iTech Skillnets, and Tarl Schuller, who's Cloud Senior Software Lead at the Galway-based communications company Avaya. Ladies, good morning to both of you. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning.
Good morning, Keith. Thanks for having us. International Women's Day.
He snuck in. I didn't even see he coming in altogether there. Talk to me a little bit in relation to, like we had earlier on, we had Mary Hoad and we had Shelley Hertridge-Quinn, and we were talking about empowering females in politics, and you're talking about empowering people in leadership as well. This is what we're talking about today.
Yes.
Which one of you wants to take the first question?
So I'll take the first question. So I suppose within the technology sector, we're cognizant of the fact that we have very few females in the sector in general. So across the population, we would have about 25% of the people working within the tech sector are females. So we have a body of work to do around that. And then we also have a body of work to do around getting them into leadership roles.
But it's the same in politics, so it is. It is. Why do you think is that, Taryn?
I think the main reason is, number one, is lack of role models. So if people aren't seeing what they could become, they don't see themselves in that. And then confidence. Women build up confidence in a very different way to men. Men generally have confidence more easily.
Do you think so?
Oh, yes, definitely. Brought up from kids. Boys are a lot more confident usually than girls. It has to be trained in from that, like, age.
Mm. And I think there's also a perception that it's a very male-dominated world. So when people think of the technology sector, they think about coding, that it's all about coding, when in actual fact, the sector is about much more than that. And I think over time, that perception seems to have grown, because I graduated back in the early 90s with a degree in computer science. And when I went to college, in our class of 22, there was 10 women and 12 men. So we were almost 50-50. Mm. And same with the workplace. But over time, it seems like it's become seen as a real male-dominated world. And I don't know where that change has happened, but it definitely has.
But now it's time to turn that tide.
It is, absolutely. And we have a lot of initiatives that we're working on to help that.
But I think this starts in primary school.
It does, without a doubt.
There's no point in shadow boxing here. Like, we've got a wonderful science festival here each and every year, and the work that they do is absolutely tremendous. But that has to start in primary school.
It does. And we have a number of initiatives that we're running. We have an EduTech program where we work with our member companies in the technology sector to adopt a school. So some of our member companies would actually go in regularly to those schools and bring role models in with them, so that the students, both male and female, can see what it's like to work in the sector. Because I think there's a lot of education to be done around that. Mm. And also with parents, because when we were deciding what our career choices were going to be, it was our decision. But I think over time, the parents have become more involved in that process. And as a result, we also need to educate the parents so that they know more about the sector. And it's a fantastic sector to work in.
But that's a very good point, actually. We made our own, I'm a lot older than you, but we made our own decisions. But parents really, I suppose, they are very much part of the decision-making process. And I spoke to a parent, indeed, friend last night, and they were making the decision as to where their daughter would go following the Leaving Cert. And I felt like saying, would you just let her do what she wants to do?
I know our parents were very much, well, whatever makes you happy, off you go and
do it.
That
was it, But that was the right thing, really.
Yeah.
Don't try and control it. Taran, just from your point of view then, because you're with Aveia in the industrial estate there, would it be the same stats for you in Aveia?
Especially female leadership would be quite small. It's getting bigger. We, the company, are making a difference, but it's a slow transition. And once again, it's a lack of role models. So that's why joining on groups that ITech have, like Digital Women's Forum, is great, because it empowers women, it teaches us the skills we need, it builds our confidence. There's so many different programs that we run that do that. And even just networking locally with others, inspire.
But you see, we were talking earlier to Mary and to Shelley, and so they've brought this caucus group together for politics, that is. But you can actually see the two of them have grown, even though the two of them are very strong politicians in their own way. But they love the camaraderie, they love the support, they love what this caucus stands for. I know it's an American word, but maybe we need that kind of caucus for people in leadership.
Definitely. And even the committees that we're on, even if we organise live events, sometimes we have to stand up on stage in front of like 200 people. You just see the difference in women, like giving that little pep talk before somebody goes up doing it for the first time, showing the lessons learned and sharing that experience. It's, for me, it's been instrumental in increasing my confidence and increasing my career goals. Yeah.
Which is very important, because you deserve them, and nobody should stop anybody from their goals.
Yeah.
Like, I would know an awful lot of very confident people, females, people that are very, very strong and very, very good at what they do. And they've got confidence. So are you saying that you have to work at that confidence?
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting facts that I found out is that if a woman's applying for a job, if she doesn't meet 100% of the criteria on that list, she generally doesn't apply. For a man, if they take 50% of that job, they're like, oh, well, I'll give it a shot. It's somehow that it's built into the psyche.
Is that the chancer in the male, is it?
I don't know.
Must be.
Yeah. Or confidence, or like a lot of women have imposter syndromes as well, just because the lack of role models. So you feel like you're trying something new, where men would just see that as a normal thing in their work environment. Yeah.
But I think the conversation we're having is very important. How do you change it?
By the initiatives that ITech.
So we receive funding from Skillnet Ireland. Excellent organisation. So we applied for funding back in 2018 to develop a leadership programme purely for females. We were successful in getting the funding, and we have been rolling it out since then. So at this point, we probably have 130 females that have gone through the programme.
I was
huge success. Taran was one of them. Huge success.
Was she good?
She was super.
Was she?
The star.
Did she get the gold star?
She did. Absolutely.
And I stepped into a leadership role after that.
But you see, but you had the drive to do it.
Well, actually, I had a male director who encouraged me to go on the programme. So
hats off to him.
Yes, and I'm working for him again in a different company. Yeah.
Hats
great
off to
representation.
And it actually is amazing to see the progression of those ladies that have gone through the programme, because I'd say half of them have moved up into a senior role. Mm. So it's wonderful to see.
You must be like the proud mammy for them then, are you?
I am. I mean, I feel very privileged to be able to help people reach their full potential. It's a great position to be in.
But everybody deserves it.
Everybody, absolutely.
Everybody deserves to maximise their potential.
Yeah. But sometimes you just need somebody to push you along.
Yeah, my wife. Yeah, it's interesting. It really is. It's an interesting concept. How can they get further details on the whole ITAG side of things?
So if they go out to our website, which is itag.ie, also, I should say that while we're a technology network, Skillnet Ireland supports business networks in many different sectors. Mm-hmm. So here in Galway, we have ourselves looking after the technology sector. You've Gross and the Mon out in Spittal, who look after the
great
creative
crew,
sector and the media crew. And then you also have Galway Executive Skill Net, who are based here in the city, and they're a cross-sectoral network.
Three very strong organisations.
Yes, absolutely. And then your own network, the Learning Waves Skill Net, who are also very strong.
Mm. Well done to you. So, Taryn, did I get your surname right? Schuller?
Schuller, yeah.
I got you right.
Very Irish, yeah.
It's very Irish, yes, it is, yeah. You're the Schullers from the Aran Islands then, are you?
Yeah, of course.
The world is your oyster.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you going to go?
Where am I going? Well, so I've actually worked across three different countries. I've moved from South Africa, worked in the UK for a long time. Now in Galway. Well, I live in Mayo, but Ireland is great because there's just that sense of community that I haven't felt in any of the other countries I've worked in.
Yeah.
And an organization like ITAG, who brings people together, sharing ideas, sharing, just teaching each other, helping each other grow. I'm quite happy to stay here and keep expanding my experience.
And would you like to live in Galway, would you?
I just bought in Mayo, so I'll be there for a while. But I was here for a while.
Just hoping to bring Sam back to Galway.
Is she? Yeah. Mayo. Your man outside the windows, he's ecstatic now, says that you mentioned Mayo. If a guest mentions Mayo, like, he gets about 3 foot tall or so, he does. That's all he wants.
Well, I better mention Donegal then, me being a Donegal native.
Donegal. But see, there's no rivalry between ourselves and Donegal.
No.
But there's no rivalry between Mayo either.
Well, actually, my husband would say otherwise, because I would never support Galway in football. And he's there going, why?
Why wouldn't you?
And I said, because you bet us in the 1983 final.
Would you let that go now at this stage? The 1983 final?
Semi-final.
What age were you, two?
About that.
I don't know what'll we do at all. There you go. Guys, thanks for dropping into us. Dee Timoney, thank you for joining us. And Taryn Schuller, thank you for joining us today. And please keep doing what you're doing on an ongoing basis. itag.ie for further details. We're back with the Connacht Tribune headlines next. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. We are with you until 12 midday. If you want to get further details, by the way, you can contact Dee Timoney, and you can do so at itag.ie. That's itag.ie. Now, Dave O'Connell joins us on the line today from the Connacht Tribune Group Editor, and he joins me. Dave, morning to you. How are you today?
Well, I'm very well, Keith. How are you? Sad, so sad about Saoirse, but what a remarkable impact she made throughout her life. Too late for us to cover this week, but I hope we'll reflect it properly and suitably next week.
Absolutely. I know her parents were listening to us today, but they have to live with this for the rest of their lives, which is something. And I must say, one of the more difficult mornings to come on air was this morning. Yeah. I was talking to Kieran Cannon earlier on, and he was just so upset that it brought me down, but we're back up again. And that's what Saoirse would want, and her parents would want as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just a sadness across the county, I have to say. But that's also an indication of the huge mark that she left on everyone's life. And that will live forever with us.
Absolutely. Now, like ourselves, you and your colleagues met up with the British ambassador this week while he was in Galway. And you have great coverage of this.
Yeah, we're starting to move in different circles at this stage. Keith, the Ferrero-Rocher circuit, I suppose, is what you might call it. But Paul Johnson had plenty to say about a whole variety of topics. As you know, because you spoke to him, he was here to officially open the Galway Chamber of the British and Irish Chamber of Commerce. But he also waxed lyrical on the joys of Connemara, which he admits he kind of inadvertently discovered because his, like everybody else, his plans for a foreign holiday were derailed by COVID. So he spent time down the west and discovered it all for himself. But more importantly, he said that he saw huge potential, he sees huge potential to significantly grow the number of visitors into Galway and into the west from the UK, as well as obviously the main reason was here to forge stronger economic and cultural ties between the two islands. So clearly a man on top of his brief. And to be honest, what impressed me is that there's only positive news coming from him. So that's why it's reflected on the front and inside today.
Now, you had the story of two Galway mums and their contribution to World Down Syndrome Day as well. Again, do you know what? Strong story.
Strong story. And I, you know, I've said it so many times that it might sound like a cliche, but it's not meant to be. But people who actually make a positive contribution out of something that There's a lot of work involved in all of this. So as you say, it is to do with World Down Syndrome Day. That's coming up on the 21st of March. And Claire Lavelle has written a song called Rockin' 21. The 21 reference, people will know, is the chromosome 21 that people with Down syndrome have. Claire is the mum to 12-year-old Alex, and she her background is very much in amateur music and dramatic shows. And she's joined by fiddle player Yvonne Flynn, as well as seven singers, made up of the siblings and friends of kids with Down syndrome. And they recorded this lovely song in Gerry Fahey's studio out in Craigmore. It's written from the perspective of a child with Down syndrome. And it is, as I say, because of World Down Syndrome Day on the 21st of March. So the story and lovely photographs on page 3.
I'm working with the mom of a Down syndrome, wonderful person, I have to say, an awful situation. But anyway, somebody referred to the child in question as having Downs and really upset the family. So will people just be very careful when they're talking and using that language? But that's a cracking story today. I was reading it this morning. Your 4 pages of coverage on Cheltenham this week.
Yeah, all the work of John McIntyre, for whom this is Christmas and his birthday all rolled into one. And as I say every year, he has the tips for the week. And I'm nearly sure, I almost positively said that he'd refund the money to anyone who loses on his bets. So it's a win-win. You can't go wrong. But I'll give out his number. It's not the Tribune you need to contact. It's Mac on this. So more seriously, been chatting with Crockwell trainer Paul Gilligan and owner Michael Earls, among others, about their festival hopes. And there's loads more in there as well, because as you well know also, this is a huge personal passion for Max. So 4 pages on that this week.
And he's had that passion for a long, long number of years. So God bless him for keeping going.
Yes, and he's still not making any money.
That's okay. Pauline is counting it for him. Listen, there's plenty more in sport as well today in today's County Tribune.
Sure is. The former Galway All-Ireland winning manager, Micheál Donough, who will be back on familiar ground this weekend, bringing his Dublin side to face his home county in Pearse Stadium. So that's previewed. Plenty as well on the footballers' big win and very important win over Monaghan last weekend, as well as Galway United's busy week. Great win over Waterford, narrow defeat to Shells, and now a home game with Drogheda tomorrow evening. It's a massive weekend for Galway United's women, whose season gets underway with a trip to Athlone this Saturday. My old buddy Phil Trill has put together a well-balanced, terrific squad, and they aim to build on their excellent first season. And mention as well in sport of two great Connacht rugby bastions, Craigs and Connemara, the All Blacks. They met in the Junior 1A League final, a cracking game by all accounts, 36-33 in the end for Craigs, who looked dead and buried going into the final quarter. So all of that reflected in there as well. A busy week on the sports front.
And what else have you got? It's because the paper is full.
Well, it sure is. Loads into the Clifton Hospital saga, no more than yourself. We have that in there also, that NTA survey on Galway's green travel, and the headline fact that Galwegians who walk and cycle in the city every day collectively remove 29,000 cars off the city's roads every day. And if all of those cars were in a traffic jam, it would tail back 138 kilometres. That's the equivalent to the distance from Air Square to Sligo, which, to be honest, is what it feels like most Fridays in Galway still. Mm. But anyway, a lovely story and picture on the reunion of the class of 1968 to 1972 in Our Ladies College in Gort. They celebrate more than half a century since they ran for their freedom out of the classroom. Three pages of court in there as well, a deserved tribute to the former county mayor, Pat Hines. The launch of the All-Ireland Sheep Shearing and Wool Handing Championships, which will take place in Mount Belleau over the June bank holiday. And there's a piece on Ballinasloe Musical Society's upcoming production of The Little Shop of Horrors, which is directed by some lad I'd never heard of called Ronan Lardner, and he features in there as well. He looks very happy and very competent, but you can't always tell everything from photographs, you know?
Listen, well done. And thanks for joining us today on the programme. Deb O'Connell joining us there. I'm joined in studio now by Maura Joyce, because the Sir Optimists in Ballinasloe are hosting an event with proceeds going to Women's Aid. Maura, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Having it, and I love the library in Ballinasloe. So you're having it in the library.
We're having a function tomorrow to mark International Women's Day in the library, upstairs in the library, which used to be the chapel in the convent. And I remember as a student there years and years ago, we often got up there for Mass and it was beautiful. But it's a lovely, the library is absolutely gorgeous.
So what time are you starting at?
We're starting at 11 o'clock tomorrow, and we have some very interesting speakers for our for the event. We have Sister Alicoe Gleeson, who is a founder member of the Social Services in Ballinasloe. Excuse me, and she has worked very hard all her life improving the lot of people, elderly people and disabled people in the area. She's speaking, and then we have Dr. Aideen Ryan, who is a cancer immunology researcher and a lecturer in the university here in Galway. Mm-hmm. Aideen is actually from Kiltormer and went to school in Ballinasloe and had the rest of her education in Galway in the university here and in Cork. And she's a leading researcher in cancer immunology. And she has had a lot of papers published, and she has been recognised both nationally and internationally for her work in research.
And who would you like to go along then, Maura, tomorrow?
Well, we'd invite everybody is welcome to come along. It's entry is free. There will be a donation, and as we said, donations are all going to Women's Aid Refuge. But everybody is welcome.
It's a great charity to give it to.
It is. It's a very worthwhile charity, and Sir Optimus are involved with Women's Aid Refuge through our Orange the World Day, which I think you might be familiar with. We have that in November. But Women's Aid Refuge, it is a very worthwhile cause.
And are you hoping for a good crowd tomorrow?
We are hoping for a good crowd. We also have, just to mention, we have a young girl speaker tomorrow, a student from Old School. Her name is Rebecca Blaine, and she has got through to the finals, the national finals of the Sir Optimus Public Speaking Competition, and that's been held next Saturday, the 9th of March, in the Mansion House. So we would like to wish her every success in her endeavours.
What a wonderful story. Really is a wonderful story. So tomorrow then, from 11 a.m.
on, 11 until 1 o'clock in the library.
Will there be a cup on tea?
There will be a cup on tea or a cup of coffee and a few little bits to eat and everything else. So everybody, as I say, is welcome, and we look forward to the support.
Listen, Maura, thanks for popping into us today. Again, Sir Optimus in Ballinasloe hosting that event tomorrow to celebrate International Women's Day tomorrow, 11 a.m. And the two speakers, Sister Alicoe Gleeson, who's a wonderful person, I have to say, and Dr. Aideen Ryan, lecturing cancer research in NUMI Galway. Again, a donation at the end, if you can afford it, and if not, just go along and be at one with them. Maura Joyce, thank you for joining us today.
Quick commercial break,
and we're back just after these. Now, very good morning to you. I want to go to Andrea Fitzgerald, who joins me from Galway Simon, because Galway Simon Community has raised awareness of women in homelessness for International Women's Day indeed. And Andrea joins me on the line. Andrea, good morning to you.
Morning, Keith. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us today. We continue to talk about this, but the problem doesn't get any better.
No, Keith, unfortunately it doesn't. And I suppose from Galway Simon Community's perspective, we felt it was important leading up to International Women's Day to highlight that very fact. I suppose the numbers are quite disappointing. There's 43% of the adults that are accessing emergency accommodation in the West are now women, Keith. And that's coming from the latest figures from the Department of Housing.
Wow.
So those numbers in our perspective are going all in the wrong direction. So I suppose to break that down, what that means is that currently in Galway, Mayo and Roscommon, there's 180 women living in emergency accommodation. So that's a 19% increase from last year.
Now, is that across all sectors, or is that purely Simon?
That is across the figures that the Department of Housing collects. So that is anybody that's accessing emergency accommodation. So that's figures that Galway Simon are collecting, that Cope Galway are collecting, that the local authorities are collecting.
That's 180 people.
That's 180 women, Keith, which is, I suppose historically, The figures around homelessness have always, they've been high in terms of male people accessing emergency accommodation. So to say that now across the West there's 180 women living in homeless accommodation is it's quite stark. I suppose a number of years ago, we did see that that trend was beginning to develop. So in 2019, Galway Simon did set up a dedicated women and family service to try and provide special supports to women because, you know, ultimately their experience of homelessness will be quite different to males.
Yeah. But I mean, the situation is, that's a big village, so it is, somewhere in County Galway, those 180 women. That's a village. I mean, if you had that, you'd have, you know, it really and truly, the government would be throwing the kitchen sink at it. And is there any breakdown of those then? Are they... How many of that 180 are local Indigenous people, and how many of those, perhaps, and I'm asking the question, is are seeking asylum and are seeking such emergency accommodation?
All those 180 women, Keith, are people that are entitled to access a homeless service. So what that simply means is that they would have, they would be open on a local authority housing waiting list.
Oh, wow.
Those are the numbers, and I suppose it is important also to highlight that those numbers may not actually be accurate, because those figures that are collected, Keith, do not include women that are sofa surfing or people that are in precarious situations, maybe staying with family and friends. So that could just be the tip of the iceberg, really.
Really and truly, as we head into International Women's Day tomorrow. I mean, if the tide could be turned between now and 12 months' time, wouldn't it be absolutely wonderful? But it's going to take an awful lot of hard work for that to happen. And I've spoken to Karen Golden on many occasions in this very studio, and you can just see the passion in her face, wanting to help people, but finding it so difficult.
Absolutely. And it's heartbreaking, I suppose, for us as a service, when you have women that are coming to you in very vulnerable states. You know, everybody's journey, Keith, is quite different. You know, for some women, the issue is just a lack of affordable accommodation, you know, and if we can help to provide or assist people to acquire that, they may not need our support thereafter. But there are also a cohort of women who feel absolutely trapped in an emergency response system, and women who would have long histories of, you know, quite traumatic events going back to their childhood. So everybody's story is different. And unfortunately, a number of women find themselves in these positions because, you know, they're fleeing domestic violence situations. So we try and cater, we take everybody as they present to us, and we try and provide, I suppose, a client-centred type support to people. Some women will not need us after we have assisted them in finding accommodation. Other women may need us for a little bit longer, you know.
Okay. Andrea, I'll have to leave it for today, but International Women's Day it is tomorrow, but thank you for joining us today. And I can sense the passion in your voice as well, but thank you for joining us today. Andrea Fitzgerald from Galway Simon Community. If you can assist in any way, you've got accommodation, you can assist, you can work with them, please just make contact with any of the team, Karen Golden, with indeed Andrea, or any of the team in Galway Simon. And now though, let me just move on slightly today, because I want to go to our next guest, and I want to go to our next guest by doing this.
Galway Bay FM's Pet Talk with Pet Mania. Well Park Retail Park, the home of pet care in Galway. 091-761-638.
And Emily Miller joins us on the line again today. Emily, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. But we have some questions for you today. Now, we're going to give you grades out of 40. Is that okay? Pass or honour or otherwise? But some of the questions we get, you know, from time to time, I wonder, how much exercise should my dog get every day? I think there should be a Fitbit for dogs, and Emily.
You know what? Maybe, but I suppose the answer to the question is, it depends on your dog. So some dogs are happy and content with maybe about half an hour of exercise a day, maybe a happy little stroll through the park, whereas other dog breeds might need 2.5 hours of active running, chasing, hiking and working. So there's huge variations in terms of how much exercise a dog needs. I suppose the minimum anyone should be looking at on an average would be half an hour a day, but there's actually, you know, if you've got a collie, for example, you know, so if you've got a border collie, they're, you know, your traditional sheepdog, they love working, they love being out, they love getting involved in agility, they love being stimulated. And, you know, so you're looking at anything up to two and a half hours of physical activity and lots of mental stimulation for those dogs versus a Bichon Frise who's probably going, look, quite happy, take me for a walk, play with me a little bit, and I, you know, and I'll be quite content. So I suppose one of the things we say to people when they're asking that question is, well, do you know what kind of breed you have? Do you know what classification of breeds they are? So there's six different classifications of breed, and then that kind of helps kind of steer you in the direction of the type of exercise and the type of play your dog will need. There's more information on that on our website. If you pop into our Pet Care Advice Centre, you'll get that. And it kind of just goes through, it's like, you know, the difference between your sporting breeds and your, you know, so it'd be your retrievers, your, and then looking at your, oh my God, your terrier breeds. There's different, you know, so there's different types of things that they like to do. There's different types of play that they like. And even within that, you know, within your sporting breeds, you know, or your hunting dogs traditionally, there's different types. So they're kind of, they've got traits there that would dictate what they'd prefer to do, you know. So you've got retrievers who like to retrieve. You've got pointers who prefer to point and tell you there it is. So sometimes you might, now this is generic, you might have a pointer who, you know, loves to play fetch. But in general terms, their breed trait would typically be to say, oh, there's the ball, you're true. And they'll tell you where it is rather than bring it back to you. Whereas your retriever breeds will retrieve.
What
kind of dog you have, know what kind of breed you have, and understanding where they're at. But, you know, anything between half an hour and 2.5 hours a day is probably the answer to the question.
On the other side, Emily Miller says, a marketing manager at Pitmania, briefly, can I put this one to you? My cat sleeps all day. How do I get him to play? On one side, we have the dog that wants to be walked, but the cat just wants to sleep.
Well, I think the thing about cats is cats sleep a lot. It's a big part of what they do. You know, they spend, you know, the bulk of their day will be spent sleeping and grooming and whatever else. But what you have to remember about cats is when they want to move, they move fast. And what they love to do is they love to stalk, and they love to hunt, and they love to climb, and they love to jump. So what they tend to, so what you want to try and do is, you know, nurture those natural instincts to actually do those things. And one of the things about your cat is that cats will play for maybe 2 or 3 minutes at a time, and then they'll go, right, I'm done, I'm off, come back to me. But they might want to do that anything up to 15 times a day. So you've got lots of little pieces throughout the day. And one of the things about cats is, again, you're trying to nurture those natural instincts. And you know, they love to hunt, they love to stalk, so they love those toys that will move, or that they'll stop and they'll move, because they're kind of going, right, is that a mouse, can I catch it. They want to pounce, they want to do those. So that's why your traditional, you know, your ball is straying, they love it, because that's the kind of thing. So using different types of toys, taking them away after playtime and coming back with something else the next time out is really important, because it kind of allows them to go, oh yeah, this isn't the norm, this is something new, this is something new for me to hunt. And then other things, like, you know, cat trees and scratchers are brilliant to encourage them to climb and just get them moving. So particularly our indoor cats, it's really important that we provide those with to them, so that they've got reasons to move and reasons to interact, because they do like to sleep and they do a lot of it. But when they're active, they can be very active.
If they want to get further details, I have to leave it at that, unfortunately. But Pitmania in Well Park, pop into any of the team there. They're all as learned as Emily Miller is. But Emily, thank you for joining us today on the programme. Pitmania is in Well Park. Beautiful new store in there. Pop in and chat to them.
Galway Bay FM's Pet Talk with Pitmania. Well Park Retail Park Galway. Leading the way in pet health, grooming and nutrition. Petmania.ie.